Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now we're going to talk with John Eitzmo, who is a constitutional attorney. He is the senior counsel for the Foundation for Moral Law, and he's going to give us an update on what's happening with Chief Justice Roy Moore of the Alabama Supreme Court, who was suspended from his duties on May 6th of this year because of some activities related to his opposition to same-sex marriage. John, am I saying it correctly that way?
That is correct. You've summarized it very well.
All right. Now, I understand that his opinion is that the Obergefell decision of the Supreme Court, 5-4, where they said, okay, we're going to redefine what marriage is. We have that right, supposedly. But anyway, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of same-sex marriage, and Roy Moore is saying, okay, this case dealt with four states, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee, but that does not include Alabama. Therefore, Alabama is exempt. And besides, the voters of Alabama voted overwhelmingly when they had the chance a few years ago to say that marriage is between one man and one woman.
All of that is correct. In fact, when we adopted our Sanctity of Marriage Amendment in 2006, 81% of Alabama voters voted for that amendment, and as we see it, that is the Alabama Constitution, and we believe the probate judges are required to follow that rather than the decisions of a lower federal court. And then as for the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell, I would argue that in addition to the issue as to whether or not it is applicable only to those four states rather than others, I would argue in addition to that point that there are other reasons that decision should be regarded as illegitimate, much like the Wisconsin Supreme Court said that the Dred Scott decision was illegitimate and effectively nullified it as it applied in Wisconsin, and that was true in several other northern states as well. But first of all, I would say that not only is the decision utterly devoid of constitutional support, and in fact, Justice Kennedy almost acknowledges that in his opinion when he says that the framers of the 14th Amendment didn't define liberty, they left that up to future generations. And Justice Scalia correctly points out that when Justice Kennedy says future generations, what he really means is us, the 9 unelected lawyers on the court. Mm-hmm. But also, it's arrived at by illegitimate means. The fact is, it is a 5-4 decision, but of those five that voted for same-sex marriage, two of them had a duty to recuse because they themselves had performed same-sex marriages. In fact, Justice Ginsburg had performed one just a couple of days after the oral arguments took place.
Wow.
I've been a lawyer for almost 46 years now. I've never seen a case where the duty to recuse was as obvious as it is here, and yet they stayed on the case. Now, I might just point something out here, and that's that if those two justices, Kagan and Ginsburg, had recused, the vote would have been 4-3 to affirm the ruling of the Circuit Court of Appeals. If only one of them had recused, it would have been 4-4, and on a tie vote, the Circuit Court of Appeals would have been upheld. And so there's really only one reason that they refused to recuse themselves, and that's they knew that their votes were needed to get a 5-4 majority in this case, and it is as raw a political coup as you could ever imagine, complicated by the fact that it is by those who are supposed to be considered the least dangerous branch of government and the least likely people that you'd think would be undermining our constitutional system with a coup.
Okay, so who is it that has suspended the judge or the chief justice? And where does this case go from here?
Well, in Alabama, we have what we call the Judicial Inquiry Commission. And this commission's role is to investigate judicial misconduct. And if they decide that there's probable cause to believe a judge has engaged in misconduct, then they will file charges. These are not criminal, but they would file charges against that judge, kind of like a grand jury indictment, you might say. And then once those are filed, then a body called the Court of the Judiciary, which is established under Alabama law, will conduct a hearing in the case, and Chief Justice Moore will have an opportunity to be represented there. In fact, he is represented by Matt Staver of Liberty Council.
Oh, wow.
So he is in very good hands. I think the world of Matt Staver.
I do, too.
But anyway, when that'll take place, we're thinking maybe July or August. And then they can decide to utterly exonerate him, or they can decide that he's guilty of some of the allegations and not others. And if they decide he's guilty of any of them, then they can remove him from the bench or suspend him or reprimand him or a number of other things that they can do short of actually kicking him out of office.
Well, what did Roy Moore actually do specifically that he's being charged for doing? I know he opposed the same-sex marriage decision, but so did a lot of the people in the country. I mean, even the Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts said, look, if you like same-sex marriage and you agree with this decision, fine, but recognize one thing. It has nothing to do with the U.S. Constitution. And, I mean, that I've never in my life remembered a Supreme Court decision where a high official would say something like that. In other words, we're not even dealing with the Constitution. So here's Roy Moore being crucified because of a total misinterpretation by the liberal justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. But what did he do specifically, Roy Moore?
Well, first of all, after a federal judge early in 2015 struck down Alabama's Sanctity of Marriage Amendment and said that there is a right to same-sex marriage, Chief Justice Moore issued an order, which he has the authority to do as the chief judicial officer in the state, directing that state probate judges should follow the state constitution and not the ruling of that federal judge. And in March of 2015...
Okay, so this is all before Obergefell.
Before Obergefell.
Okay, which was June 26th.
2015, that's about 3 months before Obergefell, the Alabama Supreme Court, in a 6-1 vote with Chief Justice Moore himself having recused, ruled in this case that a federal judge's opinion is not binding on a state Supreme Court and that the probate judges are to follow the Alabama Constitution. In other words, they took what Chief Justice Moore had said in an administrative order, and they made it a opinion of the Alabama Supreme Court. And it was a very, very detailed and very well-written, well-reasoned opinion. I might add, too, that there are U.S. Supreme Court decisions. In fact, the most recent one, Johnson versus Williams from 2013, is very clear when it says that the California Supreme Court is not required to follow the 11th Circuit in its interpretation of the 14th Amendment.
Wow.
But anyway, I mean, that's dealing with lower federal courts, not the U.S. Supreme Court. Anyway, so all of that was kind of where it stood up until the Obergefell decision in late June of last year. And after that, the probate judges are wondering, well, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. Do we issue licenses or don't we? And so, well, there had been several motions filed by the probate judges asking for a clarification by the Alabama Supreme Court, and the court didn't rule. So in, I believe it was January of this year, Chief Justice Moore then issued an administrative order saying that that provision of the Alabama State Constitution is still valid law, that the Obergefell decision has not yet been applied to the state of Alabama by any federal court with proper jurisdiction to do so. And he said until then, Alabama judges, probate judges, should follow the Alabama Constitution and treat that provision as though it is still law. And it is that order that they are talking about. In other words, when they're accusing him of misconduct.
Okay, so that's the smoking gun.
Anything immoral, unethical, in the way you and I would define it. Simply, they're saying that he has undermined the rule of law by encouraging disobedience to the highest court of the land, the U.S. Supreme Court.
And then his
side
of it would be, again, going back to that point, that the Obergefell decision specifically dealt with four states in the case, Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. And what Roy Moore is saying is, hey, Alabama's not in that list of four.
And, you know, that's been an issue that's been debated for a long time, whether a Supreme Court decision applies only to the parties or to others similarly situated. One problem with saying it applies to others is that that's assuming they're all the same. In other words, it's possible there could be something unique about the Alabama provision that makes it different from the four states that were resolved in Obergefell. But even more than that, what I think we're going to argue here is that this particular decision is so egregious that the state courts, state legislatures, and the like have a right and a duty to nullify and disregard it, because they say is, number one, without constitutional support, number two, arrived at by illegitimate means, and number three, it seeks to redefine the institution of marriage. And I don't think any governmental body, especially in group of unelected judges, have the authority to redefine God's institution of marriage.
Robert George of Princeton, who is a great hero and so forth, but he and a group of scholars said this decision cries out to be defied. And here's Roy Moore, okay, saying I'm going to defy it, and that not just willy-nilly, he's going to defy it based on the rule of law as he understands it, and now he's in trouble for that.
Well, Robert George is an absolutely brilliant conservative Christian jurist there at Princeton, and I think his authority on this carries a great deal of weight. But yes, and there, I mean, if you read through the decision, I'd say first of all read Obergefell and just see how it's based on thin air, just simply the desires and proclivities of the justices, and then read the dissenting opinions. Roberts, and then Scalia's, which is joined by Thomas, and then Alito's, and I think Thomas had his own dissent as well as joining with Scalia's. Scalia particularly makes this point, and he says that this violates a basic principle of a constitutional republic. You know, we were founded on this principle of no taxation without representation, but there's something even deeper than that, he says. No social transformation without representation. This represents a social transformation that the people haven't voted on, but rather that five members of the judiciary are trying to force on the country.
And when the people did get to vote on it, in more than 30 cases, more than 30 states, everybody voted in favor of traditional marriage, and there was one or two exceptions going beyond 30 states, but 30 states, the people voted for it. Amazing.
And
it is for traditional
that,
marriage.
There's no question here. The states have the right to legalize same-sex marriage if they choose to do so. But they shouldn't be forced to do so when the Constitution doesn't say anything about it. Another thing Justice Scalia points out here is why the Supreme Court shouldn't be acting in that way is, he said, they're not a representative body. They're not elected. They're not even representative of the legal community. He points out that of these nine justices in the court, of course, he's no longer there, unfortunately, but of these nine, every one of them was a graduate of either Harvard or Yale. That's not typical of the court or of the legal profession as a whole. He says that most of them are from the Northeast or the Great Lakes, and he says there's not a single Westerner on the court, and then he adds California does not count. There's not a single Southerner. Said every one of the court justices is either Catholic or Jewish. There is not a single Protestant. There is not a single evangelical on the court. So this is not even a representative body of lawyers, let alone of the nation itself, and yet they are engaging in social transformation without representation.
Yeah, and in one of those dissents, the one from Alito, he was saying, look, you know, this is, I suppose, somebody in the privacy of their own home could whisper their dissent, their disagreement with the idea of same-sex marriage. But if you take that out in the public realm, especially after this decision, you know, you'll be labeled a bigot. You could lose your job. You know, you could lose your livelihood. It's really a terrible injustice.
Absolutely. And who knows where it is going to go. 1 year ago, Jerry, would you have guessed that today we'd be battling over an issue of transgender bathrooms?
No.
I think a year ago, if you'd mentioned transgender bathrooms to me, I'd say, what's that?
Yeah, I agree.
And Once this issue is over with, what's next?
Yeah, no, you're right. In fact, I saw one person said, wow, this country's been able to put a man on the moon. Now we're working to put a man in the ladies' room. John, that's always a pleasure to talk with you. Morallaw.org for more information. I think we ought to pray for Roy Moore, keep him in our prayers, because how his case turns out could have strong implications for religious freedom going forward. Thank you so much for joining us. God bless you.
God bless you, Jerry, and thank you.
Thank you now. Bye-bye.